In today's edition of the State Capitol Report, we will focus on the failed attempt in the state legislature last week to approve state employee contracts. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, December the 20th. There was big-time drama with this extraordinary session of the lame duck legislature over this issue, and our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, was observing it and is here in this first half hour of our state capitol report to give us the lowdown. How did this happen? What does it mean? What do you make of it? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will, after 7:30, also welcome in a labor supporter and researcher, Frank Emspach, who is an emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. We'll get his take on what happened in the state legislature last week when it comes to these state employee contracts, and talk some about why it seems state employees are in for criticism over their benefits in particular from so many these days. So that's coming up after 7:30. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, starts us off. He joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
You know, Sean, I've been around for a while. I don't recall anything so bizarre when it comes to the state legislature and a piece of legislation. There's been strange things, but this was really strange.
Yeah, I think it'll be one of those votes that people are talking about for years. It felt like one of those votes that people will be talking about for years. And a lot of people mentioned as this was happening or as soon as this had happened, that it was sort of reminiscent of what happened with the tax financing of Miller Park.
Right.
I mean, they're totally unrelated issues, and the way that the votes were flipped, you maybe can't compare, but sort of the high drama of the way that those votes flipped, makes it pretty interesting.
So. All right. So the legislature is in extraordinary session.
Right.
So let's set the stage. What's
sure.
going on?
Okay. The legislature's in extraordinary session means they called themselves back to deal with these contracts, and these contracts go back to, they cover a period from July of 2009 to through the end of next June. So it's sort of extraordinary just to begin with, in that they don't often call themselves back to do this. Also, the way they did it in the Senate, they didn't wait for their majority leader to call them back. Members got together and did it themselves. That was sort of a hint that there was something weird going on. And then just the fact that not only is this a lame duck legislature, but you had a pretty historic change of power in this last election where the whole of state government, the governor, the Senate, the Assembly, flipped from Democratic to Republican. And so that was sort of the Republican argument of against taking up these state employee contracts right now. However, however Spartan, if you want to look at them that way, there are certainly critics who would think that they were far from Spartan, but, there are no wage increases or anything like that. That sort of set the stage for what happened last week. And the question really going into the week was, if they're going to do this, will Democrats have the votes to do it? I think there was a lot of question of whether it would pass the Assembly. There was very interesting things that transpired to get them to pass it out of the Assembly. And it all came down to the Senate, where Majority Leader Russ Decker, the top Democratic state lawmaker for the last few years, a former bricklayer, former union negotiator, guy who's always talked about supporting the working people, stood up and gave a speech that a lot of people did not expect to hear from him in particular.
And he decided to, I guess, change his mind, or I don't know if we knew what his mind was, if it was made up or not, but he cast a vote against these union contracts.
He did, and he always sort of keeps his cards close to his vest, but, you got the sense that he thought that these were going to pass because he was saying in the paper, yeah, I think we can get the votes we need in the Senate. And that's partially what got people in the Assembly, Democrats in the Assembly, to come back and take this vote. So when he stood up and talked about why he was voting against this contract, you could see the shock on some of his Democratic colleagues' faces.
So what did he say?
I think we have the audio right here.
Well, I would obviously like to see a different outcome in the election, both for myself and my Democratic colleagues. The people of Wisconsin have spoken, and they have said they want someone else to make these decisions for them. There is no reason the next legislature cannot take up these contracts. Now that the election has been held and the voters have spoken, I do not feel comfortable casting a vote in favor of these contracts.
And let me just say, I mean, I'm sure there are people listening to that who would say, absolutely. You know, that's exactly how I feel. And, you know, the next legislature ought to take up these contracts. The lamped up legislature doesn't have any business doing it. I guess I'd just stress that where the words are coming from. The Democratic Senate Majority Leader, who has positioned himself as a union guy, and who, you know, up until the last minute, I mean, it gave labor and gave Democrats, the thought that they would have a chance to pass these.
And what then? His colleagues stripped him of the title of Senate Majority Leader?
Yeah, there were 17 contracts that they voted on. After Russ Decker gave a speech and voted no on the first of those contracts, deadlocking the Senate and effectively killing the contract, they immediately went to a closed caucus, is said to be fairly angry in there, and stripped him of his majority leader title. And it's really ceremonial at this point because they are the Democratic majority for just a couple more weeks of the year. But they felt like they had to send a message to labor that, you know, the rest of them didn't support what he did.
So his colleagues were shocked at his no vote. How did the state employees union react?
I don't know how you set up this this cut from state employees union director Marty Beal. It kind of speaks for itself.
He's a whore. Decker's a whore. That's all I got to say. Decker's a whore. That's all I have to say.
And he was giving that quote to anybody who wanted it last night. He gave the last one a bit louder for effect as Russ Decker walked by with a gaggle of reporters behind him.
I obviously Marty Beal quite upset with that vote. Everybody's wondering, though, if I shouldn't say everybody, but there's a lot of speculation as to whether Russ Decker made some sort of deal with the Walker administration, or did this in some way to get back at Governor Doyle because of what is the why did he do it?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that maybe we'll know in coming weeks, months, years. But right now, it's really, really hazy as to what happened there. And you know, I suppose. It's not just us speculating this. I mean, he had his Democratic colleagues who served with him for a couple decades coming out immediately after that vote and saying, I don't know what his motives were, and questioning them right off the bat. And Bob Jauch, who's, you know, one of the longest serving state senators, said he'd never seen anything like it, said it was the most selfish act he'd seen during his time in the legislature.
He's been here for almost 20 years, and he will be remembered by this one sad moment in life. That's a shame. But what he did to the workers of the state is unconscionable. To lead them to the point where they believed that this was going to be finalized is unconscionable.
And, you know, that is why Marty Beal and others were quite angry at the end. I think they were more concerned about what was going to happen in the assembly earlier in the day and whether they would have the votes there in what was a fairly slim Democratic majority.
Well, in fact, the assembly, let's just turn our sights on the assembly for a moment. They had to go through all sorts of contortions to get the votes they needed.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if Russ Decker, you know, if this had gone differently, we'd be talking about if Russ Decker had supported the contracts, we would be talking about what happened in the assembly as the big story. And that was that they brought all their members back and brought back independent representative Jeff Wood, who was serving a jail sentence, to vote on these contracts to get the one vote margin they needed to pass 16 of 17 of them out of the state assembly.
So the one vote margin was provided, presumably by someone who got a day off of jail.
Yeah, I mean, a work release. He was there. It's not like he broke out of jail or anything. And it's my understanding he'll have to actually serve one extra day on his sentence because because he came to vote on the contracts. But yeah, if Jeff Wood had not been there, most of those contracts would have split down the middle and failed. And he was asked why it was worth it to come down afterward.
Well, in the past, I voted in favor of state employee contracts. Sometimes I voted against some of them. I thought there were some pretty reasonable concessions in these. Probably the most more concessions in these state employee contracts than any that I ever voted for when the Republicans had the majority.
In terms of wages, that's correct. In Jeff Wood's tenure, you haven't seen contracts like this, you've seen few contracts like this where you have zero increase wages and employees picking up more of their health care and pension contributions, even if that's small by private sector standards on the benefits side.
Well, we'll talk more about what's next in just a moment as our state capitol report continues, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, about this failed effort to pass state employee contracts in the lame duck session of the legislature, extraordinary session of the legislature last week. We welcome your questions for Sean, your reactions to what happened. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, snow is in the forecast. A winter storm warning for portions of west central Wisconsin this afternoon through tomorrow morning. A winter storm warning for portions of northwest Wisconsin tonight through tomorrow. A winter weather advisory posted for southern Wisconsin starting this afternoon through tomorrow. And a winter weather advisory for northeast Wisconsin tonight through tomorrow. Heaviest snow expected in western and southern Wisconsin, where 4 to 7 inches could fall, 3 to 4 inches in central and northeastern Wisconsin, and 2 to 3 inches in southern and southeastern Wisconsin. Hope you like snow. Right now, Superior 9 degrees below zero. In Green Bay, it's 7 above. Eau Claire, 7 above. In Madison, 15 above. Milwaukee, 13. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 21 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, December the 20th. We'll continue talking about the state employee contracts and the reputation of the state employees, whether state employees are being unfairly villainized during these tough budget times, with a guest who is a labor supporter, Frank Emspach, a emeritus professor with the UW Extension School for Workers, coming up after 7:30. Right now, Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, is giving us the lowdown, what happened last week in the state legislature when the state employee contracts failed to be approved. Much due to a change of mind of the outgoing Senate Majority Leader, Russ Decker. We have, Sean, a number of people who have comments. Let me share James on Facebook, who writes, "So what kind of sweetheart deal did Russ Decker get from the GOP in exchange for screwing over state workers and his own party?" We don't know if there was a sweetheart deal.
No, if all of a sudden Russ Decker pops up in a cabinet position or something like that, then we could make that assumption. But right now, we have his words to go by, and that's it.
And his words again are, the voters don't want us to do this.
Same words spoken by a lot of people, really. Mm-hmm. And again, it was not so much what he was saying, but just the source, the fact that it was Russ Decker saying that.
Is there any more known about this rumor that Russ Decker was mad at Governor Doyle for not pardoning former Senate Majority Leader, I think he was, Chuck Quala?
I can tell you that when Governor Doyle was on the set of Here and Now last Friday, the Frederica Freiberg asked him about that after they finished up their interview, and he said he hadn't been asked to pardon Chuck Quala.
And Chuck Quala's wife apparently works in Decker's office.
Yeah, yeah. And for those who haven't been paying attention, to state government for, more than 6 or 7 years, I mean, Chuck Quala was a powerful Senate Democratic Majority Leader. of the late 90s and early 2000s who was went to jail as part of the caucus scandal. So,
Paul on Facebook writes, on the other hand, Governor Doyle had well over 18 months to get this done and then decides after the Democrats lose the election to go ahead with this. Decker saw the writing on the wall and cares for the state more than his political future. So a supporter of Russ Decker and his vote against the employee state employee contracts. Doyle had 18 months to get this done and didn't, Sean?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we don't know how this bargaining happened and who decided to go forward after the election. I think it's probably more likely that the unions decided once Walker was elected that they'd just soon have a contract that had no raises and a few changes in other areas than to have no new contract at all heading into the Walker administration. But we don't know that.
Let's Speaking of the Walker administration, these contracts did have zero pay raise, mm-hmm. Pay more for health and pension, furlough days, eight per year of unpaid days off. What does Walker want other than that? Do we know?
What he has said publicly is that he wants employees to contribute more in two areas, their health insurance premiums and their pensions and the health insurance premiums. He gives the numbers here, but he wants 12% of the health insurance premiums to be paid by state employees.
12% for health care? That's not bad. That's pretty generous. There's a lot of workers out across the state who say, hey, I pay anywhere from 25 to 50% of the premiums for my health care, and if I get a retirement system, I'm paying a whole lot more than 5%. So I don't think what we've put out as an example of the sort of reforms we might be interested in the future are things that the average taxpayer, the average worker in this state would find to be particularly outrageous.
And then he's talking about a 5% pension contribution. But what he's talking about there is 5% of an employee's salary. It's not 5% of the money that's going into the pension. So, you know, that's not insignificant. And I'm guessing you'll talk about it in the next half hour. Generally, the studies that are out there show state employees lag behind the private sector in wages, but have better benefits. And so, you know, I guess the question from a state employee's perspective is whether if you take away that money from the benefits side, if there's an accompanying raise in the wage side. Probably not, given the political circumstances and the state's budget picture. And so that's why you have some, well, that's one of the many reasons why you have some stress over these upcoming labor negotiations.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Jerry in Genesee Depot. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A very interesting conversation. A few minutes earlier, I heard what Kohler Company employees had to give away, what Harley Davidson did, what Evinrude did. Where is the real world for these public employees? Anybody looked at the deficit that we've got? Someplace, somebody's got to give in a little bit here. And right now, one of the safest jobs in Wisconsin is being a public employee. Even if you might not make as much as you thought you were going to make, hey, we've got to have you. It's not like General Motors or Chrysler. Hey, we can get rid of them, buy a car from somewhere else. I think they need to wake up. Some people don't realize what sad state this state is in, and that's my thought. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much, Jerry. And that's Governor-elect Scott Walker's thought, too,
well,
Sean?
Well, and Jerry mentioned something in there that that we haven't talked about, is the idea that if you are in the public sector, even, you know, that may be changing over the next few years, but generally it is a safer, you know, more insulated from you know, an economic downturn in terms of whether or not you will have your job. Mm-hmm. And so how do you value that as you know, sort of weigh pension or wage changes?
Let's take another call from Paul in Middleton. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi. Good morning to you both. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, if Senator Decker wanted to make such a principled position, why didn't he bring this up in committee? From what I've gathered, he didn't say boo about it. And it seems to me that, you know, if you're going to negotiate a contract and then all of a sudden pull out of it in the manner in which we did, given to the fact of the political pressure, well, I guess what we're really talking about is we're all in a race to the bottom. What we're really talking about is the declining standard of living in this country. And that's really what the heart behind all of this is that we're all going to be in the third world very shortly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Well, let's talk a little bit about Russ Decker, though. He said he said one thing in committee and another thing on the floor.
Yeah, there's a special committee that meets to consider any state employee contracts. And Russ Decker, as majority leader, at least he was in the morning, majority leader, sat on that committee and voted yes for these contracts. You know, the only no vote was from a Republican. So, you know, if you're a state senator, a state assemblyman, you probably assume that even if he was sort of iffy about scheduling this extraordinary session, that the fact that he voted yes in the morning means he's going to vote yes at night. But there was that was not to be.
And we don't know why he did that.
No.
Yeah. Tom in Galesville. Hi, Tom.
Oh, hello. Good morning. Good discussion. Say, I just want to, I don't know why this discussion, though, is over the villainization of Russ Decker. May perhaps, and I talked with a state senator that was involved in all this. Perhaps Russ Decker was actually voting for the voice of the people of Wisconsin, you know, who should be the villain but the Democrats who go out and get out Jeff Wood out of prison.
Well, we talked about that, Tom.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it is all in just sort of context of who made these remarks. We have Jeff Plaley is another Democratic state senator who voted no on these contracts. Why aren't we talking about him as, what was Jeff Plaley thinking? And it's because it wasn't really a surprise. He's more of a conservative Democrat, lost a primary to a liberal challenger. And it's in character with the way that he is, you could see him voting this way throughout his career. So.
And we, just 20 seconds, it's done. Now, the next legislature is going to take up these contracts.
Yeah, I mean, and it's probably back to the bargaining table for the unions and Governor-elect Scott Walker.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We'll get another perspective on this issue after we check the latest news. Well, we just heard in our last half hour how the drama unfolded last week when the lame duck legislature failed to pass in an extraordinary session state employee contracts, leaving it up to Governor-elect Walker and a new Republican-controlled legislature to finish the matter next year. Now, we will talk about why this happened and what it means from the perspective of a labor historian and labor supporter. We will wonder what you think. Do you think state employees have had it too good and should have their benefits cut? 1-800-642-1234. We heard from a caller in our last half hour who said state workers welcome to the real world, he said. This is what's happening in the private sector. It should happen in the public sector as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We welcome your reaction to these state employee contracts up in the air now and ready to be taken up by the new administration in the state of Wisconsin. Our guest is Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin School for Workers and General Manager of Workers Independent News. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, we talked a lot about the politics of all this in our first half hour of the State Capitol Report with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson. But what was your reaction to what happened last week?
Well, I think like everybody else, picking up the newspaper, I guess on Wednesday, I was surprised to see that had happened. But I think overall what we're seeing in state after state after state is a reduction in the wages and benefits of the people who work for the state, at least some of them. If we look at this, we say, how did this trend occur? And I think we need to understand the linkage between the private sector and the public sector. In the 50s and 60s and 70s, public wages and benefits were not so hot. And in fact, the competition was seen as qualified workers going to the private sector. the private sector, in a certain sense, drove the benefit and wage wagon in this country. And when the private sector wages and the benefits became were diminished, then you have the pressure on the public sector. Now, I don't like to speak in the passive voice, like we're diminished, or one of the callers earlier said, it is happening. It is not just an act of God here. What we're seeing is that profitable corporations, in an effort to make more profit, basically, have said, we're going to lower the wages and standard of living of people in the United States. And if they don't want to do it, we'll move someplace else, to Mexico or China or whatever. And they have done so. The corporations that have demanded concessions in this state, Sub-Zero, Harley-Davidson, Kohler, are not on the verge of bankruptcy. They have taken advantage of a situation and done it. Now, once that happens and you lower the standard of living of one sector of the population, clearly the other sector becomes a target. And what we've seen pretty much since 1980, I would say with the air traffic controllers, if people remember them, President Reagan at the time demonized the recipients of welfare. He had the welfare queen and all that. But consistently, conservative think tanks and theorists have said, we need to limit government, not all government, just the parts of government that dealt with regulation of the corporations or distribution of wealth. So this has been consistent, and I think that sets up the kind of situation we have here.
But, Professor Emspach, do state employees, public employees in the state of Wisconsin, are and I should say we, I should make the disclaimer that as a University of Wisconsin employee, I'm subject to the
right
to the same benefits as state employees, though I'm not a member of the state employees union. Are we being paid less, but we have more generous benefits than the private sector, or has that changed too?
That's changed too.
Mm-hmm.
If there are, the pension benefit is generally considered more secure because it's backed by the faith and credit of the state. Medical benefits vary all over the place depending on where what state you're in. In Wisconsin, we have good medical benefits and a good pension. But for many, many years, the public sector was characterized by lower wages. And we're talking about not university professors here. If you look at the campus here in Madison and most of the blue-collar workers, people are not earning huge salaries here. They're earning $30,000, $35,000 a year. To take another whack at the benefits sounds good, but it doesn't alleviate the problem that the governor has identified. So the real question is something that one of the callers said earlier. Are we in a race to the bottom, and where is it? And it's possible to lower wages and lower benefits and reduce what we call real spendable income. That's what you have after the you pay taxes and everything, to the point where we have a working class looking like it did in 1928, which was what most workers were considered, quote, poor.
So
is that the direction we want to go as a society? And I think that we need to look at this and probably say no.
Do we also, though, have to consider a $3 billion state budget deficit?
We do. And we have to take a look at where that comes from. And what we've had, again, in this country in the last 30 years is the following: a stagnation of wages. Wages have not risen beyond inflation in the private sector at all since 1975, 1980. And at the same time, a huge transference of wealth upward. So you cannot separate wages and benefits, investment in the public sector, the tax system, and the way in which we've distributed wealth. They're all connected. And if you want a more equitable situation, we need to say, I think, look at one thing historically anyway, as a historian. The greatest period of economic growth after World War II occurred between around 1947 and 1965 in this country. And at that time, the taxes on individuals and on wealth were considerably higher, in fact, about double what they are now. So when the correlation is that low taxes do not come out with high growth.
We have a full lines and limited time here. So let me go to Carol in Monroe first. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, thank you for taking my call. I find this very interesting. I was an HR director in Beloit, Wisconsin for a number of years and in Janesville in that area, Rocconi. And the one thing that I always had to do was look for people to fill the positions that we had open. In the state of Wisconsin, we could never compete with them because they were always paying far greater for the same position than what we were paying for in those areas. So, you know, it's really frustrating for me to hear that the people in the state of Wisconsin or work for the state of Wisconsin are underpaid, when I know, in fact, that was never the case. Mm-hmm. So my confusion comes with, what are they basing this information on? What are they looking at, like just Madison and comparing it to everybody else? Are they looking at the outlying areas? How are they coming up with these figures? Because my position alone, as an HR director, I was making a top scale $60,000 a year in a private sector. That same position was between $100,000 and $120,000 a year for the state of Wisconsin, doing like chores.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Carol. I was going to ask you what types of job categories you were referring to, because that makes a difference, doesn't it, Professor Emspach?
Sure. It depends, but whether you're at the professional level or not, or the administrative level. And clearly, state administrators, some of them make a lot of money. The union contracts obviously don't cover the HR director. And so when people say, when people talking about it, they're usually comparing blue-collar jobs to blue-collar jobs or relatively lower-level administrative jobs to the equivalent in the private sector. And I think there you'll find that the comparison is not so out of whack and, in fact, has changed back and forth since the 60s. But I think that if you take a look at blue-collar jobs, not the top administrative jobs, throughout the state of Wisconsin, you will not see that the wages are that much different. There's a benefit question. But let me put it to you this way. We had Chrysler and General Motors and not Ford, but the other two go through a huge bankruptcy. The largest contributor to this was medical care, $1,000 a car approximately. That's a disadvantage. And yet, that was never addressed. And so you can't just take all these things and not see a hole here. Now, the result of not addressing all this was the loss of the General Motors plant in Janesville, the loss of the engine plant in Racine or Kenosha, and a whole variety of other things that go along with it. And so we've diminished the capacity of the state, and with that, because we did not address health care. Well, how does that work? Well, now the state contracts come up. The governor says, you guys have to get it too. You have to take a cut. This is not a direction for economic growth or stability.
We are talking with Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the UW School for Workers. He is also General Manager of Workers Independent News, getting his take on the state employee contracts that failed to pass the state legislature last week and now will be taken up by the new administration. Governor-elect Scott Walker has said he wants state employees to be contributing more to pension, paying more for health insurance, among other things. Should state employees have their benefits cut? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Monday, December the 20th. Coming up after 8, we will welcome in the author of In Motion, The Experience of Travel, who will talk to us about how we can experience that wonder of travel right in our own backyards. That's coming up after 8. Right now we are talking about state workers and state worker benefits and why it seems so many are looking at state worker benefits as a way to help balance the state budget. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, who is Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. And our next caller is John in Stoughton. Hi, John. John hung up.
John's not there.
Yeah, John's not there. So instead, we will go to I guess we will go to Lloyd and Spencer. Hi, Lloyd.
Hello. Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a question, but I just wanted to comment that it's not just Wisconsin. It's all 50 states. They're going to have to make some changes to their retirement benefits for the state employees or the government employees. They need to be more they're going to have to change the way they figure the elected employees or the state employees are going to have to be more contribute more to their own funds, and there's going to have to be some changes made. The nation isn't going to pay for employees to retire. They retire too early. They should be allowed to work until they're just in the private sector, 70 or even older.
So why are you saying this must happen, Lloyd?
Well, every state in the union is faced with this issue. And I just hope that our new governor will take a page from Chris Christie in New Jersey and stop some of this spending that's going on. We got to stop the spending, but we also have to look at the employees, the state employees, and do something about their retirements.
All right, so we have to do this because it's overspending, Professor Imsbeck.
Well, I think that, again, if you say that state, if we pose the question, should state employees take a benefit cut without ever addressing the tax issues and where money goes, then there is no other way out if you say that the issue is the reduction of the deficit. There's just simply no other solution. My point is that this is a bad solution and we need to look for something else. When you reduce the amount of money coming into the economy, you set up a spiral, a downward spiral. There is no basis for saying there should be wage and benefit cuts when overall the productivity of people has increased. So I think that we need to see where the money goes, how much there is, and what's happening. For example, there is a system of federal funding for bonds, guarantee state bonds. The American bonds, I think it's called. Well, that is a way to help deal with the state deficits. If that federal project is blocked, then it puts a huge burden on the states. Well, that's been blocked in the Congress to an extent. So there's a lot of interconnections here that are not so obvious. But the key is this. If we drive down the standard of living in the private sector and say the public sector has to follow, what kind of country do we have? And this is both a political judgment and an economic judgment. I don't think that people voted in this state to go after people in November. I think people voted out of frustration, and it's not clear. But I can say one thing. If you eliminate private sector jobs, as the governor did with his rail decision, you certainly are not going to help the growth of the state.
Our next caller is Tina in Beaver Dam. Hi, Tina.
Good morning. Good morning, Joy. I just wanted to mention that, I mean, we're talking about government employees. We've talked about state employees. We've talked about a lot of the big unions. We've talked about John Deere and Harley Davidson. But there are many, many, many of us out here that make their livelihood in other ways. My father was a small business owner. My husband owns a small business, and in today's economic climate, it's even a smaller business. I sell real estate, which in any other industry would probably qualify me for unemployment right now. But I just think many of us are just holding on by a thread, trying to make ends meet until things get better. So we need to make our own nest egg. We don't have a pension. We don't have a 401k. We don't have anything. We must make that pot of gold at the end of our rainbow when we retire. And I really can't wrestle up any sympathy for state employees that need to contribute a little bit more. We are all contributing way much more in order to make payroll at our businesses, in order to make ends meet around our house. It's just, it's the way a whole different sector of life is living right now that I don't think, we're kind of the unsung people, that nobody really is fighting for us, but we're out there and we are just trying to get through. Mm-hmm. And I know the way most of us do it is we put our money in the stock market, you know, so when corporations make money and, you know, that is fine. And doesn't also the state employees and the teachers, don't they have their pension invested in the real estate or the stock market. So they're in a win-win situation. If corporations make money to pay dividends to pay into the retirement, you know, that is absolutely a win-win, but nobody's slugging it out for me.
So nobody's slugging it out for Tina, Professor Emspach.
Well, I mean, our little news organization employs 6 people. The largest single problem we have is health benefits. So everything the caller said is absolutely true. I mean, my little small business struggles the same way with the same issues. But I think the solution is not to go after somebody else. The solution is to try to see how we can have a benefit and health care system in this country that does what every other civilized country does, which is provide these things for the average person without burdening them with murderous taxes. And I think that you have to look at these things. Absolutely true. If you're trying to save for your pension in a volatile stock market, it's going to be a problem. The state system, incidentally, is based on a combination of bonds and stocks and investments. And the variable compensation end actually went down. So not everybody is 100% insulated, but fundamentally, a benefit system based on luck, which is what we've got, isn't going to work. And a system where we say that the way to generate economic growth is to lower wages and benefits ultimately has never worked any place on the planet. And so to do that, which is what the private sector is doing now, and now, because I think of a reasonably well-orchestrated campaign against the public sector, people feel this, we are going in the wrong direction. And I don't think it's possible to solve it by asking the question, should state employees take a benefit cut? Because if you say the deficit, we can't do anything about that, that's the issue. And I'm saying economic growth is the issue. Well, we're not going to be able to agree because, sure, if you're going to pay off something, you should cut expenses. But if the consequence of that is to further lower the standard of living of people in the state, that's the wrong place for Wisconsin to be.
This is a very similar comment, but it's one I hear time and again. Tim on Facebook writes, my premiums went up on my insurance, and I had retirement cuts as my company got rid of its 401k match. Again, public employees should reflect the public. That's why I think we need to make deep cuts and eliminate their pensions. After all, who actually still has pensions other than government workers? There seems to be this, I don't have it in the private sector, so you shouldn't have it in the public
sector. Sure. I mean, I think greed and selfishness are pretty important things in our country, and this is an example of it. But as a responsible citizen, do we say the way to move forward is to impoverish somebody else? The greatest thing with Social Security was taking millions of seniors out of poverty. That's what it was designed to do. I think that we need to look at that and say, do we want to go back to that system? If nobody has a pension, then we're going to have lots and lots of very poor seniors around or lots and lots of very poor people. And is that where we want to go and reward people for a lifetime of work? It's just not fair.
We have just a minute to go. Where do you see this going on the state level with our new administration?
Well, I think the governor is going to move to try to change, the legislature is going to try to change the type of bargaining that you can do for state contracts as a way of limiting the ability for public employees to bargain over pensions and health care. I think there'll be a huge fight about it, but I think there is one thing that we have in Wisconsin, which has been a relative stability over many years, and I don't know that's the most important way to move forward, to risk that stability. But I think the governor is committed to go and reduce the standard of living of the people of the state, and he's been very clear about that.
Well, I hope we will talk again soon. Thanks very much for being here. Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. In our previous half hour, we heard from Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We thank them both for their time during this edition of our State Capitol Report. And we thank you for listening. We thank Bill Martins, Rob Ferret, and Chris Molina for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.